I know that's a hard thing to hear. How long do I have? You're a relatively young woman. We will treat it aggressively. Uh-huh. There's always hope, Ms. Grant. Is there? Cora said. There's also karma.
Karma?
There was a poison in him, Cora said to herself, and I drank it up. Dr. Prasher frowned, leaned forward. Evelyn, this is a disease, not retribution or payback for sin. Those are Dark Ages thoughts. Uh-huh. Well, Dr. Prasher stood, frowning. I want to schedule a bronchoscopy for this afternoon. It should confirm the diagnosis. Is there someone you'd like to call? Cora got to her feet, feeling unsteady enough that she had to grasp the back of the chair. The pain at the base of her spine leaped out again, worse now that she knew what it was. Cancer. I have cancer. She couldn't imagine saying it out loud. She closed her eyes, exhaled, imagined, remembered, a little girl with wild red hair and chubby little hands and freckles like cinnamon flakes reaching out for her, saying, "Mama, I love you." Cora had gone through so much. Lived when she could have died. She'd imagined her life 100 different ways, practiced 1,000 ways to atone. She'd imagined growing old, growing senile, laughing when she was supposed to cry, using salt instead of sugar. In her dreams, she'd seen Lenny fall in love again and get married and have another baby. Dreams. In a breathtaking instant, Cora's life crashed into focus, became small. All of her fears and regrets and disappointments fell away. There was just one thing that mattered. How could she not have known it from the beginning? Why had she spent so much time searching for who she was? She should have known, always, from the very beginning. She was a mother. A mother. And now? My Lenny. How would she ever say goodbye? Lenny stood outside the closed door to her mother's hospital room, trying to calm her breathing. She heard noises all around her, up and down the hall, people hurrying on rubber-soled shoes, carts being rolled from room to room, announcements coming over the loudspeakers. Lenny reached for the silver metal door handle, gave it a twist. She walked into a large room, separated into two smaller spaces by curtains that hung from metal runners on the ceiling. Mama was sitting up in bed, leaning back into a pile of white pillows. She looked like an antique doll, with eggshell skin stretched too tightly across her delicately crafted face. Her collarbone peered out above the neckline of her oversized hospital gown, the skin on either side hollowed out. "Hey," Lenny said. She leaned down, kissed her mother's soft cheek. "You could have told me you were going to the doctor's. I would have come with you." She pushed the feathery, gray-blonde hair out of her mother's eyes. "Do you have pneumonia?" "I have stage 4 lung cancer. Only it's a sneaky little shit and has invaded my spine and liver, too. It's in my blood." Lenny literally took a step back. She almost lifted her hands to block her face. "What?" "I'm sorry, baby girl. It's not good. The doctor was not particularly hopeful." Lenny wanted to scream, "Stop!" She couldn't breathe. Cancer. Are you in pain? No, that wasn't what she wanted to say. What did she want to say? "Ah," Mama said with a wave of her veiny hand. "I'm Alaska tough." She reached past Lenny for her cigarettes.
I'm not sure they allow that in here.
I'm pretty sure they don't, Mama said, her hand trembling as she lit up. But soon I'll start chemotherapy. She tried to smile. So I can look forward to baldness and nausea. I'm sure it will be a good look for me.
Lenny moved closer. You'll fight it, right? She said, blinking back tears she didn't want her mother to see.
Of course. I'll kick this bitch's ass.
Lenny nodded, wiped her eyes. You'll get better. Grandpa will get you the best care in the city. He's got that friend who's on the board at Fred Hutch. I'll be fine, Lenny. Mama touched Lenny's hand. Lenny stood there, connected to her mother by breath and touch and a lifetime of love. She wanted to say just the right thing, but what would that be? And how could a few flimsy words matter in a cancer sea? I can't lose you, Lenny whispered. Yeah, Mama said. I know, baby girl. I know. Dear Matthew, it's only been a few days since I wrote to you. Funny how much life can change in a week. Not funny, ha-ha, that's for sure. Last night, as I lay in my comfy bed, in my store-bought pajamas, I found myself with a lot of things I didn't want to think about, and so I found my way to you. I don't think we talked about your mother's death. Maybe that was because we were kids, or maybe it was because you were so traumatized. But we should have talked about it later, when we were older. I should have told you I would listen to your pain forever. I should have asked you for memories. I see now how grief becomes thin ice. I haven't lost my mom yet, but a single word has pushed her away from me, created a barrier between us that never existed before. For the first time ever, we are lying to each other. I can feel it, lying to protect each other. But there's no protection, is there? She has lung cancer. God, I wish you were here. Lenny put down her pen. This time, the act of writing to Matthew was no comfort at all. It made her feel worse, in fact, more alone. How pathetic that she had no one to talk to about this, that her best friend had no idea who she was. She folded the letter up and put it in the shoebox with all the others she'd written over the years and never sent. That summer, Lenny watched cancer erase her mother. First to go was her hair, then her eyebrows. Next was the firm line of her shoulders. They began to droop. Then she lost her posture and her stride. Finally, cancer took away movement altogether. By late July, after cancer had erased so much, the truth was revealed by her latest CT scan. Nothing they had done had helped. Lenny sat quietly beside her mother, holding her hand when they learned that the treatment had failed. The cancer was everywhere. An enemy on the move, hacking through bones, destroying organs. There was no discussion about trying again or fighting it. Instead, they moved back into the Gallagher house, set up a hospital bed in the sunroom where light flowed through the windows and contacted hospice care. Mama had fought for her life, fought harder than she had fought for anything, but cancer did not care about effort. Now Mama slowly, slowly angled up in the bed to a slouchy sitting position. An unlit cigarette trembled in her veiny hand. She could no longer smoke, of course, but she liked to hold them. There were a few strands of hair on the pillow, running like gold veins on white cotton. An oxygen tank stood by the bed. Clear tubes inserted into Mama's nostrils helped her breathe. Lenny got up from her place beside the bed and put down the book she'd been reading aloud. She poured Mama a drink of water and offered it. Mama reached for the plastic cup. Her hands were shaking so badly, Lenny placed her own hands over her mother's, helped her hold on to the cup. Mama took a hummingbird sip and coughed. Her bird-thin shoulders shook so hard, Lenny swore she heard the bones rattling beneath the thin skin. I dreamed of Alaska last night, Mama said, slumping back into the pillows. She looked up at Lenny. It wasn't all bad, was it? Lenny felt a shock at hearing the word mentioned so casually. By tacit agreement, they hadn't spoken about Alaska, or Dad, or Matthew, in years, but perhaps it was inevitable that they would circle back to the beginning as the end neared. A lot of it was great, Lenny said. I loved Alaska. I loved Matthew. I loved you. I even loved Dad, she admitted quietly. There was fun, I want you to remember that. And adventure. When you remember, I know it's easy to pull the bad up. Your dad's violence. The excuses I made. My sad love for him. But there was good love, too. Remember that. Your dad loved you.
This hurt more than Lenny could bear, but she saw how much her mama needed to say these words.
I know, Lenny said. You'll tell MJ all about me, okay? You tell him how I never sang the words to any song right, and how I wore hot pants and sandals, and I looked good in that shit. You tell him how I learned to be Alaska tough, even though I didn't want to, and how I never let the bad stuff kill me, how I kept going. You tell him I loved his mother. From the moment I saw her, and that I'm proud of her. I love you too, Mama,
Lenny said, but it wasn't enough, not nearly enough, but all they had now was words, too many of them, and too little time.
You're a good mother, Lenny, even as young as you are. I was never as good a mom as you are. Mama, no lies, baby girl. I don't have time.
Lenny leaned down to smooth the few hairs back from Mama's forehead. They were fine as goose down, wispy. This whittling down of her was unbearable. With every exhalation, it seemed, Mama lost a little more of her life force. Mama reached slowly for the nightstand. The top drawer glided open with the soundlessness of expensive crafting. With a shaking hand, she pulled out a letter, folded crisply into thirds.
Here.
Lenny didn't want to take it.
Please.
Lenny took the letter, unfolded it carefully, and saw what was written on the first page in a scrawling, barely legible handwriting. It read, I, Coraline Margaret Gallagher Albright, shot my husband, Ernt Albright, when he was beating me. I weighed his dead body down with animal traps and sank it in Glass Lake. I ran away because I feared going to prison, even though I believed then, and now, that I saved my life that night. My husband had been abusive for years. Many Connac residents suspected the abuse and tried to help. I didn't allow it. His death is on my hands and on my conscience. Guilt has turned itself into cancer and is killing me. God's justice. I killed him and hid the body. I did it all alone. My daughter had nothing to do with it. Sincerely, Coraline Albright. Beneath her mother's shaky signature was her grandfather's signature, both as an attorney and as a witness, and a notary seal. Mama coughed into a ball of tissues. She drew in a phlegmy breath and looked up at Lenny. For a terrible, exquisite moment, time stopped between them. The world caught its breath.
It's time, Lenny. You've lived my life, baby girl. Time to live your own. By calling you a murderer and pretending I'm an innocent? That's how you want me to start a life? By going home. My dad says you can pin it all on me. Say you knew nothing about it. You were a kid. They'll believe you. Tom and Marge will back you up.
Lenny shook her head, too overwhelmed by sadness to say anything more than, I won't leave you.
Oh, baby girl, how many times have you had to say that in your life?
Mama sighed tiredly, gazed up at Lenny through sad, watery eyes. Her breath was wheezing, labored.
But I am going to leave you. It's the thing we can't run from anymore. Please,
she whispered.
Do this for me. Be stronger than I ever was.
2 days later, Lenny stood just outside of the sunroom, listening to Mama's wheezing breaths as she talked to Grandma. Through the open door, Lenny heard the word, sorry, in her grandmother's trembling voice.
a word Lenny had come to despise. She knew that in the past few years, Mama and Grandma had already said what they needed to say to each other. They'd talked about the past in their bits and pieces way. Never all at once, never one big end-up-crying-and-hugging moment, but a constant brushing up of the past, re-examining actions and decisions and beliefs, offering apologies, forgiveness. All of it had brought them closer to who they were, who they'd always been, mother and daughter. Their essential, immutable bond, fragile enough to snap at a harsh word a long time ago, durable enough to survive death itself.
"Mommy, there you are," MJ said. "I looked everywhere."
MJ skidded into place, bumping her hard. He was holding his treasured copy of Where the Wild Things Are.
"Grammy said she'd read to me."
"I don't know, baby boy."
"She promised."
On that, he pushed past her, moving into the sunroom like John Wayne looking for a fight.
"Did you miss me, Grammy?"
Lenny heard her mama's quiet laughter. Then she heard the clang and squeak of MJ hitting the oxygen tank. Moments later, Grandma exited the sunroom, saw Lenny, and came to a stop.
"She is asking for you," Grandma said quietly. "Cecil has already been in."
They both knew what that meant. Yesterday, Mama had been unresponsive for hours. Grandma reached out, held Lenny's hand tightly, and then let go. With a last, harrowingly sad look, Grandma walked down the hallway and up the stairs to her own bedroom, where Lenny imagined she let herself cry for the daughter she was losing. They all tried so hard not to cry in front of Mama. Through the open sunroom door, Lenny heard MJ's high-pitched,
"Read to me, Grammy,"
and Mama's inaudible reply. Lenny glanced down at her watch. Mama couldn't handle much more than a few minutes with him. MJ was a good boy, but he was a boy, which meant bouncing and chatter and nonstop motion. Mama's thready voice floated on the sunlit air, bringing a flood of memories with it.
"The night Max wore his wolf suit and made mischief of one kind or another."
Lenny was as drawn to her mother's voice as she'd always been, maybe more so now, when every single moment mattered and every breath was a gift. Lenny had learned to submerge fear, push it down to a quiet place and cover it with a smile. But it was there always, the thought, is that breath the last? Is that the one? Here, at the end, it was impossible to believe in a last-minute reprieve. And Mama was in such pain, even hoping for her to survive another day, another hour, felt selfish. Lenny heard her mother say,
"The end."
And the words carried a sharp, double meaning.
"One more story, Grammy."
Lenny entered the sunroom. Mama's hospital bed had been placed to take advantage of the sunlight through the window. It almost looked like a fairy tale bed in deep woods, lit by the sunlight, surrounded by hothouse flowers. Mama herself was Sleeping Beauty, or Snow White, her lips the only place left to have any color. The rest of her was so small and colorless, she seemed to melt into the white sheets. The clear plastic tubes looped from her nostrils, around her ears, and went on to the tank.
"That's enough, MJ," Lenny said. "Grammy needs a nap."
"Aw, crap," he said, his little shoulders dropping.
Mama laughed. It turned into a cough.
"Nice language, MJ."
Her voice was a whispery sound.
"Grammy's cough is bleeding again,"
MJ said. Lenny pulled a tissue from the box by her mother's bed and leaned close to dab the blood from her mother's face.
"Give Grammy's hand a kiss and go, MJ. Grandpop has a new model airplane for you guys to put together."
Mama's hand fluttered up from the bed. The whole back of her hand was bruised from IVs. MJ leaned close, banging the bed so hard it jostled her mother, clanging a knee into the oxygen tank. He kissed the bruised hand carefully. When he was gone, Mama sighed, lay back into the pillows.
"The kid is a bull moose. You should get him into ballet or gymnastics."
Her voice was almost too quiet to hear. Lenny had to lean close.
Yeah, Lenny said.
How are you?
I'm tired, baby girl.
I know.
I'm so tired, but I can't leave you. I can't. I don't know how. You are it for me, you know. The great love of my life. Peas in a pod,
Lenny whispered.
Two of a kind.
Mama coughed.
The thought of you being alone, without me.
Lenny leaned down, kissed her mother's soft forehead. She knew what she had to say now, what her mother needed. One always knew when to be strong for the other.
I'm okay, Mama. I know you'll be with me. Always,
Mama whispered, her voice barely heard. She reached up, her hand shaking, and touched Lenny's cheek. Her skin was cold. The effort it took for that single motion was evident.
You can go,
Lenny whispered. Mama sighed deeply. In the sound, Lenny heard how long and how hard her mother had been fighting this moment. Mama's hand fell from Lenny's face, thumped to the bed. It opened like a flower, revealing a bloody wad of tissue.
Oh, Lenny, you're the love of my life. I worry. I'll be okay,
Lenny lied. Tears slid down her cheeks.
I love you, Mama.
Don't go, Mama. I can't be in the world without you. Mama's eyelids fluttered shut.
Loved you, my baby girl.
Lenny could barely hear those last whispered words. She felt her mother's last breath as deeply as if she'd drawn it herself. 29.
She wanted you to have this.
Grandma stood in the open doorway to Lenny's old bedroom, dressed in all black. She managed to make mourning look elegant. It was the kind of thing that Mama would have made fun of long ago. She would have looked down on a woman concerned with appearances. But Lenny knew that sometimes you grabbed hold of whatever you could to stay afloat. And maybe all that black was a shield, a way to say to people, don't talk to me, don't approach me, don't ask your ordinary, everyday questions when my world has exploded. Lenny, on the other hand, looked like something washed up by the tide. In the 24 hours since her mother's death, she hadn't showered or brushed her teeth or changed her clothes. All she did was sit in her room behind a closed door. She would make an effort at 2 when she had to go pick up MJ from school. In his absence, she swam alone in her loss. She pushed the covers back. Moving slowly, as if her muscles had changed in the absence of her mother, she crossed the room and took the box from her grandmother, said, "Thank you." They looked at each other, mirrors of grief. Then, saying nothing more, what good were words, Grandma turned and walked down the hall, stiffly upright. If Lenny didn't know her, she'd say Grandma was a rock, a woman in perfect control. But Lenny did know her. At the stairs, Grandma paused, missed a step, her hand clutched at the banister. Grandpa came out of his office, appearing when she needed him, to offer an arm. The two of them, heads bowed together, were a portrait of pain. Lenny hated that there was nothing she could do to help. How could 3 drowning people save each other? Lenny went back to bed. Climbing in, she pulled the rosewood box into her lap. She'd seen it before, of course. Once it had held their playing cards. Whoever had made this box had sanded it until the surface felt more like glass than wood. It was a souvenir, maybe from the road trip they'd taken a lifetime ago when they'd lived in a trailer and driven all the way to Tijuana. Lenny was too young to remember the trip, before Vietnam, but she'd heard her parents talk about it. Lenny took a deep breath and opened the lid. Inside, she saw a tangle of things, a cheap silver charm bracelet, a set of keys on a ring that read, "Keep on truckin'," a pink scallop shell, a beaded suede coin purse, a set of playing cards, a native tusk carving of an Eskimo holding a spear. She picked up the items one by one, trying to put them in the context of what she knew of her mother's life. The charm bracelet looked like the gift one girl would give another in high school, and reminded Lenny of all the missing pieces in her mother's life, questions Lenny had failed to ask, stories Mama hadn't had time to share. All of it lost now. The keys, Lenny recognized. They were to the house they'd rented on the cul-de-sac outside Seattle all those years ago. The scallop shell showed her mother's love for beachcombing, and the suede purse probably came from one of the reservation gift shops. There was a salty dog shot glass, a piece of driftwood into which had been carved Cora and Ernt, 1973. Three white agates, a photograph of her parents' wedding day, taken at the courthouse. In it, Mama was smiling brightly, wearing a tea-length white dress with a bell-shaped skirt and holding a single white rose in white-gloved hands. Dad was holding her close, his smile a little stiff, dressed in a black suit and narrow tie. They looked like a couple of kids playing dress-up. The next photograph was of the VW bus with their boxes and suitcases lashed on top. The door was open, and you could see all of their junk piled inside. It had been taken only a few days before they headed north. The three of them stood beside the bus. Mama was wearing elephant bell jeans and a midriff-bearing top. Her blonde hair had been twined into pigtails, and a beaded headband encircled her head. Dad wore pale blue polyester pants and a matching shirt with oversized collar points. Lenny was in front of her parents, wearing a red dress with a white Peter Pan collar and Keds. Each of her parents had a hand on one of her shoulders. She was smiling broadly, happily. The photograph turned blurry, danced in Lenny's unsteady hand. Something red and blue and gold captured Lenny's attention. She put down the picture, wiped her eyes. A military medal. A red, white, and blue ribbon with a bronze star affixed to its pointed end. She turned the star over, saw the inscription on the back. Heroic or meritorious achievement, Ernt A. Albright. Beneath it lay a folded-up newspaper article with the headline, "Seattle POW Released," and a picture of her dad. He looked like a cadaver, his eyes staring dully ahead. There was almost no similarity to the man in the wedding photo. I wish she remembered him from before. How often had her mother said that over the years? She pressed the picture and the medal to her chest, as if she could imprint them onto her soul. These were the memories Lenny wanted to keep. Their love, his heroism, the image of them laughing, the idea of her mother beachcombing. There were two things left in the box, an envelope and a folded piece of notebook paper. Lenny set the medal and photograph aside and picked up the piece of paper, unfolding it slowly. She saw Mama's fine, private schoolgirl script. To my beautiful baby girl. It's time to undo what I did. You live under a false name because I killed a man. Me. You may not see it yet, but you have a home, and home means something. You have a chance for a different life. You can give your son all that I couldn't give you, but it takes courage, and courage is something you have. All you have to do is go back to Alaska and give the police my confession letter. Tell them I'm a murderer and let the crime finally end as it should have, with you excused from its taint. They'll close the case and you'll be free. Take your name and your life back. Go home. Scatter my ashes on our beach. I'll be watching out for you. Always. You have a child, so you know. You are my heart, baby girl. You are everything I did right. And I want you to know I would do it all again, every wonderful, terrible second of it. I would do years and years of it again, for 1 minute with you. Inside the envelope, she found 2 one-way tickets to Alaska. All up and down the well-manicured street of Queen Anne Hill, life clattered along on this last Saturday in July. Her grandparents' neighbors were gathered around Weber Barbecues, grilling store-bought meat and making designer margaritas and blenders, their kids playing on swing sets that cost as much as a used car. Had any of them noticed the drawn shades in the Gallagher house? Could they somehow sense grief emanating through stone and glass? This sorrow couldn't be talked about in public. How could they express grief for the loss of a woman, Evelyn Grant, who had never really existed? Lenny climbed out her bedroom window and sat on the roof, the wooden shakes worn smooth by years of people sitting in this spot. Here, more than anywhere else, she felt Mama beside her. Sometimes the feeling was so strong, Lenny thought she heard her Mama breathing, but it was just the breeze, whispering through the maple leaves on the tree out front.
I used to catch your mother out here smoking cigarettes when she was 13 years old, Grandma said quietly. She thought a closed window and a breath mint could fool me.
Lenny couldn't help smiling. Those few words were like an incantation that brought Mama back for a beautiful, exquisite second, a flame of blonde hair, a laugh in the wind. Lenny glanced behind her, saw her grandmother standing at the upstairs bedroom's open window. A cool evening breeze plucked at her black blouse, ruffled the trim at her throat. Lenny had a fleeting, surprising thought that her grandmother would wear black for the rest of her life. Maybe she would put on a green dress, and regret and loss would eke from her pores and change the fabric to black.
May I join you?
I'll come in. Lenny started to back up. Grandma angled through the open window, her hair crunching on the frame, getting dented.
I know you think that I'm Jurassic, but I can climb out onto a ledge. Jack LaLanne was 60 when he swam from Alcatraz to San Francisco.
Lenny scooted sideways. Grandmother climbed through the opening and sat down, keeping her straight back flush against the house. Lenny backed up to be even with her, carrying the rosewood box with her. She hadn't stopped touching its smooth surface since she'd opened it the day before.
I don't want you to go.
I know.
Your grandfather says it's a bad decision, and he should know.
She paused.
Stay here. Don't give them that letter.
It was her dying wish.
She's gone.
Lenny couldn't help smiling. She loved that her grandmother was a complex mixture of optimism and practicality. The optimism had allowed her to wait almost 2 decades for her daughter's return. The practicality had allowed her to forget all the pain that had preceded it. Over the years, Lenny knew that Mama had more than forgiven her parents. She'd grown to understand them and to regret how harshly she'd treated them. Perhaps it was a road every child ultimately traveled.
Have I ever told you how grateful I am that you took us in, that you love my son?
And you.
And me.
Make me understand, Lenny. I'm afraid.
Lenny had thought about this all night. She knew it was crazy and maybe dangerous, but there was hope, too. She wanted, needed, to be Lenny Albright again, to live her own life, whatever the cost.
I know you think of Alaska as cold and inhospitable, a place where we were lost, but the truth is we were found there, too. It's in me, Grandma, that place. I belong there. All these years away have cost me something, and there's MJ. He's not a baby anymore. He's a boy and growing up fast. He needs a dad.
But his dad is...
I know. I've spent years telling MJ as much of the truth as I could about his father. He knows about the accident and the rehab center. But it's not enough to tell stories. MJ needs to know where he comes from, and it won't be long before he starts asking real questions. He deserves answers.
Lenny paused. My mom was wrong about a lot of things, but one thing she had right was about the durability of love. It stays. Against all odds, in the face of hate, it stays. I left the boy I loved when he was broken and sick, and I hate myself for that. Matthew is MJ's dad. Whether Matthew can know what that means or not, whether he can hold him or talk to him or not, MJ deserves to know his own family. Tom Walker is his grandfather. Alyeska is his aunt. It is unforgivable that they don't know about MJ. They would love him as much as you do.
They could try to take him from you. Custody is a tricky thing. You couldn't survive that.
That was a dark corner. Lenny couldn't look around.
It's not about me, Lenny said quietly. I have to do the right thing. Finally.
It's a bad idea, Lenny. A terrible idea. If you've learned anything from your mother and what happened, it should be this. Life, and the law, is hard on women. Sometimes doing the right thing is no help at all.
Summer in Alaska. Lenny had never forgotten the exquisite, breathtaking beauty, and now, in a small plane flying from Anchorage to Homer, she felt a great opening up of her soul. For the first time in years, she felt fully herself. They flew over the green marshlands outside of Anchorage and the silvery expanse of Turnagain Arm, low tide revealing the gray sand bottom, where so many unwary fishermen went aground and the magical boar tide rolled in on waves big enough to surf. And then Cook Inlet, a swath of blue dotted with fishing boats. The plane banked left toward the snow-clad mountains and flew over the glacial blue Harding ice field. Above Kachemak Bay, the land turned richly green again, a series of emerald humps. Hundreds of boats dotted the water, ribbons of white water fluttering out behind them. In Homer, they bumped down onto the gravel runway, and MJ squealed happily, pointed out the window. When the plane came to a stop, the pilot came around and opened the back door and helped Lenny with her rolling suitcase. So outside that bag, it didn't even have shoulder straps. She held on to MJ with one hand and rolled her suitcase along the gravel runway toward the small aviation office. A big clock on the wall told her it was 10:12 a.m. At the counter, she gained the receptionist's attention.
Excuse me, I understand there's a new police station in town.
Well, not that new. It's up past the post office on Heath Street. You want me to call you a cab?
If Lenny hadn't been so nervous, she would have laughed at the idea of catching a cab in Homer.
Yes, please, that would be great.
Waiting for the cab, Lenny stood in the small aviation office, staring in awe at the entire wall filled with four-color brochures advertising adventures for tourists. The Great Alaska Adventure Lodge in Sterling and Walker Cove Adventure Lodge in Conneck, fly-out lodges in the Brooks Range, river guides who hired out for the day, hunting trips in Fairbanks. Alaska had apparently become the tourist mecca Tom Walker had imagined it could be. Lenny knew that cruise ships pulled into Seward every week in the summer, offloading thousands of people. Moments after the cab arrived, she and MJ were at a police station, a long, low-slung, flat-roofed building set on a corner. Inside, the station was brightly lit, freshly painted. Lenny fought with her rolling suitcase, muscling it up over the door jamb. The only person in the place was a uniformed woman sitting at a desk. Lenny moved resolutely forward, clutching MJ's hand so tightly he squirmed and whined, tried to wrench free.
"Hello," she said to the woman at the desk. "I'd like to speak to the police chief."
"Why?"
"It's about a killing."
"Of a human?"
Only in Alaska would that question ever be asked.
"I have information on a crime."
"Follow me."
The uniformed woman led Lenny past an empty jail cell to a closed door with a placard that read, "Chief Kurt Ward." The woman knocked hard, twice. At a muffled "come in," she opened the door.
"Chief, this young woman says she has information on a crime."
The chief of police stood slowly. Lenny remembered him from the search for Geneva Walker. His hair was trimmed into a tall crew cut. A bushy red mustache stood out against the auburn stubble that had obviously grown since he shaved this morning. He looked like a once gung-ho high school hockey player turned small-town cop.
"Lenora Albright," Lenny said in introduction. "My dad was Ernst Albright. We used to live in Conneck."
"Holy shit. We thought you were dead. Search and Rescue went out for days looking for you and your mom. What was it, 6, 7 years ago? Why didn't you contact the police?
Lenny settled MJ in a comfortable chair and opened a book for him. Her grandfather's advice came back to her. It's a bad idea, Lenny, but if you're going to do it, you have to be careful, smarter than your mother ever was. Say nothing. Just give them the letter. Tell them you didn't even know your dad was dead until your mother gave you this letter. Tell them you were running from his abuse, hiding so that he wouldn't find you. Everything you've done, the changed identities, the new town, the silence, it all fits in with a family hiding from a dangerous man.
I want to go, Mommy,
MJ said, bouncing on the seat.
I want to see my daddy.
Soon, kiddo. She kissed his forehead and then went back to the chief's desk. Between them was a wide swath of gray metal decorated with family photographs, studded with sloppy stacks of pink while-you-were-out messages, and cluttered with fishing magazines. A fishing reel with impossibly tangled line was being used as a paperweight. She pulled the letter out of her purse. Her hand was shaking as she handed over her mother's confession. Chief Ward read through the letter, sat down, looked up.
You know what this says?
Lenny dragged a chair over and sat down facing him. She was afraid her legs would stop supporting her. I do.
So your mother shot your dad and disposed of his body, and you two ran away.
You have the letter.
And where is your mother?
She died last week. She gave the letter to me on her deathbed and asked me to deliver it to the police. It was the first I'd heard of it. The killing, I mean. I thought we were running from my father's abuse. He was violent, sometimes. He beat her really badly one night, and we ran away while he slept.
I'm sorry about her death.
Chief Ward stared at Lenny for a long time, his eyes narrowed. The intensity of his gaze was unsettling. She fought the urge to fidget. Finally, he got up, went to a file cabinet in the back of the room, rifled through a drawer, and pulled out a folder. He dropped it on his desk, sat down, and opened it.
So, your mother, Cora Albright, was 5'6". People described her as slight, fragile, thin, and your dad was nearly 6 feet tall.
Yes, that's right.
But she shot your father, dragged his body out of the house, and what, strapped him onto a snow machine and drove up to Glass Lake in the winter and cut a hole in the ice, loaded him with iron traps, and dropped him. Alone. Where were you?
Lenny sat very still, her hands clasped in her lap. I don't know. I don't know when it happened. She felt the need to add on, layer words to solidify the lie, but Grandpa had told her to say as little as possible. Chief Ward set his elbows on the desk and steepled his blunt-tipped fingers.
You could have mailed this letter.
I could have.
But that's not who you are, is it, Lenora? You're a good girl, an honest person. I have glowing reports about you in this file.
He leaned forward.
What happened on the night you ran away? What set him off?
I found out I was pregnant, she said.
Matthew Walker,
he said, glancing down at the file.
People said you two kids were in love.
Uh-huh, Lenny said.
Sad as hell about what happened to him, to both of you. But you got better, and he...
Chief Ward let it hang there. Lenny felt her shame hang on the hook of the unspoken.
I hear your dad hated the Walkers.
More than hated them.
And when your father found out you were pregnant?
He went crazy, started beating me with his fists, with his belt. The memories she'd spent years submerging broke free.
He was a mean son of a bitch, from what I hear.
Sometimes. Lenny looked away. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw MJ reading his book, his mouth moving as he worked to sound out the words. She hoped these spoken words didn't find purchase in some dark corner of his subconscious, able to rise one day. Chief Ward pushed some papers toward her. Lenny saw Albright, Coraline, in the corner.
I have sworn statements from Marge Birdsall, Natalie Watkins, Tika Rhodes, Thelma Schill, and Tom Walker. All of them testified to seeing bruises on your mother over the years. There were a lot of tears when I took these statements, I can tell you that, and a lot of folks wishing they'd done things different. Thelma said she wished she'd shot your dad herself.
Mama never let anyone help her, Lenny said. I still don't know why.
Did she ever tell anyone he beat her?
Not that I know of.
You have to tell the truth if you want real help,
Chief Ward said. Lenny stared at him.
Come on, Lenny. You and I both know what happened that night. Your mom didn't do this alone. You were a kid. It wasn't your fault. You did what your mom asked of you, and who wouldn't? There's no one on the planet who wouldn't understand. He was beating her, for God's sake. The law will understand.
He was right. She had been a kid, a scared, pregnant 18-year-old.
Let me help you, he said. You can get rid of this terrible burden.
She knew what her mother and grandparents wanted her to do now, to keep lying, to say Lenny hadn't witnessed the murder, or the drive to Glass Lake, or her father sinking into the icy water. To say, not me. She could blame it all on Mama and stick to that story. And forever be a woman with this dark, terrible secret. A liar. Mama had wanted Lenny to come home, but home was not just a cabin in a deep woods that overlooked a placid cove. Home was a state of mind, the peace that came from being who you were and living an honest life. There was no going halfway home. She couldn't build a new life on the creaky foundation of a lie. Not again. Not for home.
The truth will set you free, Lenny. Isn't that what you want? Why you're here? Tell me what really happened that night.
He hit me when he found out about the baby, hard enough to fracture my cheek and break my nose. I don't remember all of it, just him hitting me. Then I heard Mama say, "Not my Lenny," and a gunshot. I saw blood seep across his shirt. She shot him twice in the back to stop him from killing me.
And you helped her get rid of his body.
Lenny hesitated. The compassion in his eyes made her say quietly, "And I helped her get rid of the body." Chief Ward sat there a moment, looking down at the records in front of him. He appeared ready to say something, then changed his mind. He opened his desk drawer, it made a scratchy, creaking sound, and pulled out a piece of paper and a pen.
Can you write it all down?
I've told you everything.
I need it on paper. Then we'll be done. Don't lose steam now, Lenny. You're so close to the end. You want all of this behind you, right?
Lenny reached for the pen and pulled the paper toward her. At first, she just stared down at the blank page. Maybe I should ask for a lawyer. My grandfather would recommend that. He's a lawyer.
You can do that, he said.
It's what guilty people do.
He reached for the phone.
Shall I call for one?
You believe me, right? I didn't kill him, and Mama didn't want to. The law knows about battered women now.
Of course. And besides, you've already told me the truth.
So I just have to write it down and I'll be done? I can go to Connick? He nodded. What difference did it make to write the words? She began slowly, word by word, rebuilding the scene of that terrible night. The fists, the belt, the blood, the gore, the frozen trek to the lake, the last image of her father's face, ivory in the moonlight, sinking into water, the sound of ice slushing over the rim of the hole. The only omission was about Large Marge's help. She mentioned nothing about her at all. She didn't mention her grandparents either, or where she and Mama had gone when they left Alaska. She ended with, "We flew from Homer to Anchorage and then left Alaska." She pushed the paper across the desk. Chief Ward pulled a pair of reading glasses out of his saggy uniform pocket and look down at her confession.
I'm done reading, Mommy,
MJ said. She waved him over. He slapped the book shut and half-charged across the room. He climbed up onto her lap like a monkey. Even though he was too big, she held him, let him stay, his skinny legs hanging as he kicked the metal desk with his sneaker toe. Bang, bang, bang. Chief Ward looked at her.
You're under arrest, he said.
Lenny felt the world literally drop out from under her. But you said we'd be done if I wrote it down.
You and I are done. Now it's up to someone else.
He shoved a hand through his hair.
I wish you hadn't come in here.
All the warnings over the years, how had she forgotten? She'd let her need for forgiveness and redemption trump common sense. What do you mean?
This is out of my hands, Lenny. It's up to the court now. I am going to have to lock you up, at least until your arraignment. If you can't afford an attorney...
Mommy?
MJ said, frowning. The chief read Lenny her Miranda rights from a sheet of paper, then finished up with,
Unless you know someone who can take your son, he's going to have to go to social services. They'll take good care of him, I promise.
Lenny couldn't believe she'd been so stupid and naive. How could she not have seen this coming? She'd been warned, and still she'd believed the police. She knew how unforgiving the law could be to women. She wanted to rail and scream and cry and throw furniture, but it was too late for that. She'd made a terrible mistake. There couldn't be another. Tom Walker, she said.
Tom?
Chief Ward frowned.
Why would I call him?
Just call him. Tell him I need help. He'll come for me.
What you need is a lawyer.
Yeah, she said. Tell him that, too. 30. Processed. Before today, Lenny associated that word with food that had been stretched out of recognition and changed into something bad for you, like spray cheese. Now it had a whole new meaning. Fingerprints, mugshots, turn to the right, please, hands patting her down.
This is fun,
MJ said, banging his hands along the cell bars, running from side to side.
I sound like a helicopter. Listen.
He ran again, as fast as he could, his hand hitting the bars. Lenny couldn't manage a smile. She couldn't look at him, but she couldn't look away. It had taken endless pleading on her part to get him to be in here with her. Thank God she was in Homer, not Anchorage, where she was pretty sure the rules would be more strictly enforced. Apparently, there still wasn't much crime in the area. Mostly, this cell was used to house drunks on the weekends. Clang, clang, clang. MJ! Lenny said sharply. It wasn't until she saw his face, the worried green eyes, the gaped mouth, that she realized she'd screamed it. Sorry, she said. Come here, kiddo. MJ's moods were like the sea. One glance told you all you needed to know. She'd hurt his feelings, maybe even frightened him with her outburst. Something else to feel bad about. MJ shuffled across the small cell, purposely scuffling his rubber-soled tennis shoes.
I'm ice skating, he said.
Lenny managed a smile as she patted the empty place beside her on the cement bench. He sat down next to her. The cell was so small the lidless toilet was practically touching his knee. Through the metal bars, Lenny could see most of the police station, the front desk, the waiting area, the door to Chief Ward's office. She had to force herself not to take MJ into her arms and hold him tightly. I have to talk to you, she said. You know how we're always talking about your dad?
He's brain damaged, but he would love me anyway. That's a gross toilet.
And he lives in a facility where they take care of people like him. That's why he doesn't visit us. MJ nodded.
He can't talk anymore. He fell down a hole and broke his head.
Uh-huh. And he lives up here, in Alaska, where Mommy grew up.
I know that, silly. It's why we're here. Can he walk?
I don't think so. But you also have a grandfather who lives here, and an aunt named Alieska. MJ finally stopped banging his plastic triceratops on the bench and looked at her.
Another grandpa? Jason has three grandpas.
And you have two now. Isn't that cool? She heard the station door open. Through it, the sound of a truck rumbling past outside, tires crunching on gravel, a horn honking. And there was Tom Walker, striding into the police station. He wore faded jeans tucked into boots and a black t-shirt that had a huge, colorful Walker Cove Adventure Lodge logo on the front. A dirty trucker's hat was pulled low on his broad forehead. He came to a stop in the center of the station, looked around, saw her. Lenny couldn't have remained seated even if she'd tried, which she didn't. She eased away from MJ and got to her feet. She felt a flutter of energy that was equal parts anxiety and joy. She hadn't realized until right now, this moment, how much she'd missed Mr. Walker. Over the years, she'd mythologized him. She and Mama both had. For Mama, he'd been the chance she should have taken. For Lenny, he'd been the ideal of what a dad could be. In the beginning, they'd talked about him often, until it had become too painful for both of them, and they'd stopped. He moved toward her, pulled the hat from his head, crushed it in his hands. He looked different, more weathered than aged. His long blonde hair was gray around his face and had been pulled back into a ponytail. He had obviously been working in the woods when Chief Ward called him. Dried leaves and twigs stuck to his flannel shirt.
Lenny,
he said when there was nothing but a set of jail cell bars between them.
I didn't believe Kurt when he said you were here.
He clutched the bars in his big, work-reddened hands.
I thought your dad killed you.
Lenny's shame reared up. She felt her face warm. Mama killed him when he started in on me. We had to run.
I would have helped you,
he said, lowering his voice, leaning in.
We all would have.
I know. That's why we didn't ask.
And Cora?
Gone, Lenny said in a thick voice. Lung cancer. She thought of you often.
Oh, Lenny, I'm so sorry. She was...
Yeah, Lenny said softly, trying right then not to think of all the ways her mother was special or how much her loss hurt. It hadn't been long enough yet. Lenny hadn't learned how to talk about her pain. Instead, Lenny stepped sideways so he could see the boy sitting behind her.
MJ, Matthew Jr., this is your grandpa, Tom.
Mr. Walker had always seemed impossibly, superhumanly strong, but now, with one look at the boy who looked so much like his son, she saw how it cracked him open.
Oh my God.
MJ popped to his feet. He was clutching a red plastic dinosaur in one fist. Mr. Walker squatted down to be eye to eye with his grandson through the cell bars.
You remind me of another boy with blonde hair.
Hold it together.
I'm MJ,
he said with an oversized smile, jumping up.
You want to see my dinosaurs?
MJ didn't wait for an answer, started pulling his plastic dinosaurs from his pockets, producing each new one with flourish. Over the sound of the growling, that's what T-Rex sounds like, grrr, Mr. Walker said.
He looks just like his dad.
Yeah. The past muscled its way into the present. Lenny looked down at her feet, unable to meet Mr. Walker's gaze.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you, she said. We had to leave fast, and I didn't want to get you into trouble. I didn't want you to have to lie for us, and I couldn't let Mama go to prison.
Oh, Lenny,
Mr. Walker said at last, rising to his feet.
You always had too many worries for a girl your age. So why are you in here if your mom killed Ernt? Kurt should give you both a freaking medal, not lock you up.
Lenny could have crumpled at the kindness she saw in his eyes. How could he not be angry? She'd abandoned his brain-damaged son, lied for years by her absence, and stolen years of his grandson's life from him. And now she had to ask him for another favor.
I helped her after the fact. You know, get rid of the body. He leaned in.
You admitted that? Why?
The chief outsmarted me. Anyway, maybe it's the way it has to be. I needed to tell the truth. I'm tired of pretending to be someone else. I'll figure it all out. My grandfather is a lawyer. I just need to know MJ is safe until I'm out. Will you take him?
Of course I will, but...
And I know I have no right to ask you this, but please don't tell Matthew about his son. I need to do that myself.
Matthew won't...
And I know he won't understand, but I need to be the one to tell him he has a son. It's the right thing to do.
She heard the jangle of keys, footsteps. Chief Ward was coming this way. He eased in past Mr. Walker and unlocked the cell door.
It's time, he said.
Lenny bent down to her son.
Okay, baby boy, she said, trying to be strong. You need to go with your grandpa now. Mommy has things to do.
She gave him a little shove so that he was outside the cell.
Mommy, I don't want to go.
Lenny looked to Mr. Walker for help. She didn't know how to do this. Mr. Walker laid his big hand on MJ's little shoulder.
It's a pink year, MJ.
His voice was as unsteady as Lenny felt.
That means the humpies are clogging the rivers. We could fish the Anchor River today. Chances are good you'll catch the biggest fish of your life.
Can my mommy and daddy come?
MJ asked.
Oh, wait, my daddy can't move. I forgot.
You know about your dad?
Mr. Walker said. MJ nodded.
Mommy loves him more than the moon and the stars, like she loves me, but he has a broke head.
The boy needs to leave now,
Chief Ward said. MJ looked at Lenny.
So I'm going fishing with my new grandpa, right? Then we'll play jail more?
Uh-huh, Lenny said, doing her best not to cry. She had taught her son to trust her, always, and to believe her, and so he did.
She reached out and pulled him into a hug, imprinting the feel of him. Of all the courage she had expended so far, coming home, telling the truth, calling for Tom Walker, it took the greatest toll on her to simply let her son go. She managed a shaky smile.
Bye, MJ. Be good for Grandpa. Try not to break anything.
Bye, Mommy.
Mr. Walker swept MJ into the air, planted him on his shoulders. MJ's high-pitched giggle rang out.
Look, Mommy, look! I'm a giant!
She doesn't deserve to be here,
Mr. Walker said to Chief Ward, who shrugged.
You always were a by-the-book prick. Insulting me. Good plan. Tell it to the court, Tom. We'll arraign her quickly. 3 o'clock. Judge wants to be out on the river by 4. I'm sorry, Lenny,
Mr. Walker said. She heard the gentleness in his voice and knew that the man was ready to offer comfort. Lenny didn't dare reach out. Any kindness now could break what little control she had.
Take care of him, Tom. He's my world.
She stared up at her son on his grandfather's shoulders and she thought, please let this be okay. And then the cell door clanged shut. The rest of the day passed slowly, in unfamiliar sights and sounds, in a phone jangling, in doors opening and closing, in lunch orders being taken and delivered, in boots stomping across the station floor. Lenny sat on the hard concrete bench, slumped back against the cold wall. Sunlight streamed through the small cell window, heated everything. She pushed the damp hair out of her eyes. She'd spent the last 2 hours crying and sweating and muttering curses. Everywhere she could be damp, she was. Her mouth tasted like the inside of an old shoe. She went to the small, lidless toilet, pulled down her pants, and sat down, praying no one saw her. How was MJ? She hoped Mr. Walker had found the stuffed orca, inexplicably named Bob, in his suitcase. MJ wouldn't be able to sleep tonight without him. How had Lenny forgotten to tell Mr. Walker that? The station door opened. A man walked in. He had hunched shoulders and hair so tangled it looked like he'd been electrified. He wore hip waders and carried a scuffed